Hey, what's up? This is Josh from JustUsGeeks.com, and this is a Just Us Geeks interview. Everyone, we have Pat the NES Punk talking to us live. You will know him from thepunkeffect.com and his videos, RetroWare TV. You can also look him up on YouTube. He has the Nintendo collection that everyone dreams of. It's actually more than you could dream of. I don't have the collection that everyone dreams of. I have the He has the collection I dream of. And I want to talk to him today a little bit about what he does and a little bit about what he's got. And he's very talented.
Say what's up, Pat. The NES
How's it
Punk.
Going? Thanks for having me on.
Oh, man. Thank you for hanging out with us for a little bit. We know that Brandon is a huge fan, has tried to sneak into your home, and
that's only the one time, and you know,
it's not an issue now.
It's not so much sneak as it's like peek through your window. Okay. So that's not weird.
Just kind of
that was the noise I heard in my window the other night.
Right.
Okay.
I'm sorry about the breathing. It won't happen again.
he brought Windex next time. You'll never even notice. tell us a little bit about how you started collecting retro games.
It was back in college with that whole internet thing on the rise.
Yeah, that was big.
And I found a couple of websites. One in particular was very inspiring, TSR's NES Archive. And it's still out there. You can still go up on the site and check it out. And it was one of the first sites I saw that really looked into some of the weird oddities of the NES, stuff like the demo units, stuff like the Bible Wizardry games, which I had no idea existed, Wally Bear and the No Gang. So I started looking at some of the stuff. I'm like, you know what? Nintendo's a pretty cool system. I just got rid of my system probably only 4 years prior to this point. And so I gradually started getting back into collecting from there. And plus with the rise of emulation in the late 90s with an emulator called Nesticle, because it was NES games that you'd never even heard of before. Then there was something called Mike Entler's Rarity Guide. Mike Entler was one of the first guys who took it upon himself to put together a list of every NES game that was out there, both licensed and unlicensed. That didn't exist prior to that. There was no huge list of all the games. Even the list that, like, Uncle N or Nintendo put out were not complete or accurate. So all these combinations of things happened in the late 90s, that's what really got me into it.
Right on. So what got you... So that's how you got you into retro collecting. And I'll say this, like, what opened my eyes to the world of retro collecting... I mean, of course, I was a lifelong gamer... The classic story, got the NES on Christmas as a little kid, and it was kind of no stopping from there. But it was actually James Rolfe, the angry video game nerd, and you, Pat, the NES punk, that opened me up into the world of collecting and showed me that there was this vast world and vast community of retro collectors that, you know, opened my eyes to it all. So I have...
Yeah, I still take it for granted now. I guess a lot of, like, you know, I'm a little bit older, but I guess you have teenagers, kids in their 20s that really didn't grow up with the NES.
Right.
And there's no way for them to really look at these games and discover them, especially like weird esoteric titles. So I'm guessing, you know, some of the people out there, like me and James, I guess it does sort of show people, hey, there's this other world out there, man. It's not Call of Duty 85, you know, or a Madden game. It's something a little bit more unique and special.
And it's not even just the big titles. It's not just Legend of Zelda and Mega Man. There's amazing gems on the NES that I'm really glad people are, like you, are out there bringing people's attention to lesser known games that are, you know, just as amazing and in some ways more.
I think people give the NES a bad rap because, unfortunately, Jimmy James spotlights only the bad games for the most part. People assume that all these games are terrible. But if you look at the ratio of good to bad games, the NES is just like most other systems, like the Super Nintendo, probably even modern systems, in terms of a good versus bad game. There's a lot of games out there that are really special that just people didn't know about or buy, or they didn't sell that many. Like a game like Panic Restaurant, which I reviewed, that's an excellent game that not many people even heard of that's out there.
I had barely ever heard of that game. I watched your review of that actually a few days ago. I was going back and watching a few of your videos to get refreshed for the interview, and I watched your Panic Restaurant review. That is a pretty great game. My next question to you is, while most people know you, and of course your very namesake, Pat the NES Punk, what does your collection for other Nintendo consoles look like? Like your Super Nintendo and Nintendo 64 collections? What are you as rabid about those as you are the NES?
No, the only stuff I really collect, I guess, sort of hardcore, would be the NES and TurboGrafx 16. So those are the two consoles I really grew up with and had as a kid. Other than that, though, the Super Nintendo, I mean, to you guys, it sounds like a ton of games, but to me, it's just what I compiled. I've been collecting since probably, like, 1999, so we're talking, like, 13 years of collecting. I had about 250 Super Nintendo games, probably 200 N64, maybe a little bit less than that. So, I mean, I have a decent amount of them. But it's not like a passion of mine to go out and find them. If I come across them cheap at the flea market, yeah, I pick them up. But I don't have a lot of games that I'm, like, targeting that I'm looking for actively for those systems.
Right, and as I've always found, like, I got really big into, like, trying to maybe just finish one collection of a specific Nintendo console, like the Nintendo 64. I got really big into trying to get everything for it. But when we're talking about good to crap ratios, the Nintendo 64, I tend to think goes a little more towards the crap ratio a lot of times.
They're a lot.
Yeah, I sort of knocked 64 because to me, there's only about like 12 to 15 titles that are you have to own on the system.
Right.
You know, like that. So after that, it's sort of just, okay, it's a bunch of racing games after that, you know, and a lot of split titles you don't care about. But if you want to go for a full N64 set, there aren't a huge amount of games. What is it, like 300?
Yeah, so it's something like that.
Yeah.
It's fairly attainable.
Oh, yeah, like completing an NES collection is darn near impossible. What are you sitting at with your NES titles right now?
I'm sitting at -4, basically.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
-4 away from Shigeru Miyamoto coming to your house and bringing you a golden something.
It took me a minute to register what you were saying, -4. Like, I thought you were saying you had -4 games, so like maybe your house had burned or something. I was like, oh no.
No, yeah. He made 4 extra games, so technically I have everyone plus the ones I made.
Right.
No.
What 4 are you lacking?
I do not have the 3 Panesian adult-only games, and I do not have Steam Event. And I honestly have no intention of acquiring these titles unless I find them fairly cheaply in the wild, because to me they're not worth it, especially Steam Event, because it's just world-class track meet.
Right.
And so there's no point in me just going after that. And plus, that game's all hype. I try to... People say it's a holy grail of collecting. It's not. Because honestly, outside of NES hardcore collectors, no one cares about Steam Event. The story's not that interesting.
No.
It's not a good game. It's basically a tech demo for the Bandai's Family Fun Fitness Pad, which became the Power Pad. And outside of that, like I said, no one seeks out this game to play it. They seek it out just to say, oh, I have this game that they pulled from the market. That's it.
It's not the Holy Grail as in the World Championship card being the actual Holy Grail.
No. There's no gaming significance or cultural significance to Steam Event at all.
Well, you appeared on Pawn Stars, and you know you kind of have some notoriety. So, like, when you go after a game, do you realize? Do you say something up front? Like, look, man, you know, I know what this game's worth. It doesn't matter who I am. Don't you know? You're not going to pull the wool over my eyes. Let's talk fair price for this game. Or do people just try to take advantage of you?
Oh, you're saying in general?
Yeah, in general.
Yeah. Well, I guess trading at this point. The only time I sort of get rid of like spare cards is when I go out to these conventions. But no, I think for the most part, people even at my local flea markets have sort of found that about me. So they know that the resellers start talking to me about games and what they should be asking, which I think is funny.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, hey Pat, I got this game, what should I charge at the end of time? Like, I don't know what you should charge. You should charge whatever you think you can get for it. You know?
Which is the meat of anything, whether it's baseball cards or whatever. It doesn't matter what it's quote-unquote worth. It's only worth what somebody's willing to pay for it.
$1.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll take a dollar.
Yeah. I mean,
they're asking me, you know, hey, I got this rare PlayStation game. They're looking at me for help. I'm like, I'm not an expert in every price in every game. You know, you have to, you know, just do your best what you think it's worth.
Yeah,
and as you and James Rolfe pointed out in your video about the Nintendo World Championship card, and a quick question, does James Rolfe's basement, does it smell weird? I always wanted to know.
Side note.
It smells lemony fresh.
Lemony fresh.
Lemony
wow.
fresh, okay.
The only basement on Earth that smells lemony fresh.
When we get him next, I'm
going to... It's a very clean room. I actually slept down there. It's a very clean room.
Right on. You got to sleep in the nerd room. How awesome. But anyways, your world championship card, is you and him even is quoted saying, it's not very valuable in that, like, how it's made. I mean, it's basically just a sticker glued onto, you know, a card. I mean, it's not like it's encrusted with jewels and comes with a Shroud of Turin or anything. I mean, it is literally just a little cart with some sticker glue on it.
Sure.
But your world championship cart, not to delve into too personal of your life or anything, but how did you go about acquiring that?
Your world championship cart, where do you keep it? And is it laser protected? And may I see it and never give it back?
And if it is laser protected, can I do one of those cool like spy moves where I like flip through the lasers to get it? Because I'm way too fat to do that. But
the stories are actually online, how I got both of them, believe it or not.
Good Lord, Brandon.
If you go to my website, you can find out about it.
Yeah, Brandon, if you're going, read up on the man before you say, hey, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about,
you know. I keep getting distracted.
Don't be too hard on him.
No, you don't know him. That's kind of our job.
To make a long story short, the first one, the gray one, was traded into a local video game shop called Luna Video Games.
Right.
They didn't realize it was turned in. It was in a bag of games. And that's when the kid left. They started cataloging all the games. They were like, wow, there's one in here. You know, so that's how I got the first one. I made a deal for that. And then I wrote an article about how I got that cart, basically. I just told you the long version. And the person who had the gold one discovered they had a gold one from when they were a kid. And then they got in touch with me, asking how they should sell it, how they're going to get the most amount of money. Just taking advice, I said, hey, you can put it on eBay, you can go on a website like Nintendo Age or Digital Press,
right,
form and try to sell it. Then after a couple of weeks, after I verified this guy wasn't insane, I said to myself, this could be the only opportunity I ever had in my entire life to buy literally the most popular video game in the world.
Right.
And I even though I did not really didn't have a huge amount of cash at the time, I was like, you know, I have to try and do it, just to do it. Even if I sell it at a later date, I can try and get it to own it. Just to make sure to say I had it at one point. And so we worked out a deal eventually, and that's how I got the second one. And a Wired magazine, Chris Kohler, had an article on people that own a gold NWT card. That story is there as well.
Right on. That touches my heart. That makes me think that one day I could possibly own one, even though I also don't have a lot of cash on hand.
It's not.
Well, there's some out there. I mean, they're not all accounted for. One at least, I think, is known to have been destroyed in a house fire.
Right.
Other than that, there's, you know, 13 have been found. Maybe there's like four or five more out there that haven't been thrown out. Who knows?
And Grandpa Joe leaps out of bed. I've got a golden ticket. Actually, what we're going to do is we're going to buy one of the knockoff ones and sell it to some bum at a flea market. And then tell him, oh, I heard there's some retro games at this flea market. And just see what he'll do, you know, like if he'll have to pick him up off the floor or change his pants for him or something like that. I mean, we can have a world of possibilities with this guy.
Limitless.
It's limitless. Totally limitless fun.
What you should do is plan a box of games and one of the repros, get all your spells together, and then basically make it like it's a mad, bad, mad, mad world, and then tell them that have them all run after and kill each other trying to get this box of games somewhere hidden at the flea market. That'd be funny. I should do that.
Actually, what we're going to do is we're going to buy one for $15,000, take it into GameStop, and get $9.99 for it.
You would be like, yeah. For NES game, well, they'll give you 99 cents.
Oh, God. You might as well just give it to us for free, you know. Yeah.
My next
one would have been expected. They don't take old games anymore. They'd be like, oh, go to this store. They wouldn't know what it is.
No, I guarantee you most of the people that work at GameStop would not know what that game
is. For real. My next question, we know your aptitude for classic gaming. Do you actually own a Wii U?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Do you own a Wii U?
I do not yet. I'm probably going to get one later in the year. I have some GameStop credit. And if it comes down to it, in terms of like the newer system, I'll probably get the Wii U because it's not like the Wii versus the PS3 and Xbox where the games were not coming out on the Wii. Just about all the games are going to be coming out on these next systems are going to be the same on all these systems for the most part. You're going to see GTA 5 in all three systems. So once you get to that point, well, I'm just going to get the Wii U because the Wii U has the best first-party games by far.
Yeah.
So why would I not get Nintendo system?
That's true. Plus, I mean, you know, I play everything. You know, I'm on my Xbox 360 just as much as, you know, anything else. I do play a lot of retro games, but at heart, I've always considered myself a bit of a Nintendo fanboy. I mean, it's where the most of my retro game collection is based in.
At heart, I was going to say, like, in your wallet. That's
right,
the
in my
sure
wallet.
Sign.
That's actually. But, you know, Nintendo always holds a special place in my heart. That's why I was so excited about the Wii U, and I enjoy the Wii U, but you think Nintendo's on the way to the top a little bit more with the Wii U?
I don't know about them being. I mean, they're already at the top, aren't they?
That's true. The Wii sales were highest.
Nintendo's so flush with cash that they could have failure years for the next, like, 25 years, and they'll still be in business. I don't think people realize it's how much money they made with the Wii. People forget, like, Sony lost a ton of money with the PlayStation. They didn't make money. And Sony as a company itself is losing billions of dollars a year. Next year, Sony, the entire company, could fold up, let's just say theoretically, and PlayStation would be gone in an instant. You know, these are like real possibilities. Nintendo, first and foremost, is a video game company. Sony is not. Sony is just a hardware tech company. Microsoft, at least, is a computer company. You know, so they have that going on.
Right.
So I don't think after next generation coming up, you're not going to have, I think, after this next generation, you're not going to have three systems. You're going to go to two at that point.
Yeah, probably
honestly,
so.
Yeah, because honestly, if 95% of the games are on all three systems, why would you need to have three systems at that point? Just to have God of War on one system versus Halo on the other? Can you survive on that?
They're banking on it.
And you're absolutely right about Nintendo. They'll always ride on the strength of their first party titles because they're the best in the business. It's like with our Nintendo Direct that we're going to talk about later in our podcast in tonight's episode. You know, what are they looking into announcing? Earthbound, Legend of Zelda on 3DS. You know, they're still riding on those classic franchises that are timeless and they're continually evolving for new generations.
Well, their stock jumped the other day when they announced a new Zelda for 3DS.
Right. I mean, all they have to do is whisper these names and it breathes in success. So,
we talked a little bit about this last week on our show. With Xbox 720 or whatever it's, you know, the code name for it is, you know, basically
Durango,
yeah.
Durango Unchained.
Yeah, Durango. Yeah, well, no, it's very much chained
to the internet.
Yeah, with, you know, everything coming out that's going to be an always-on console. You know, we had theorized that Sony would sell the farm to sell the PS4 at a loss just to get, you know, that business back. But Nintendo is in prime position if they can hang around to become number two or number one again in the home console system, especially if they can integrate the 3DS with your Wii U experience, man, they'll be right back to where they were.
Well, how are you defining it? Because they sold more Wiis than 360s or PlayStation,
right?
The
Wii was the number one seller this last generation.
Yeah, and it was their number one seller of all time.
And also, it was profitable from day one, whereas Microsoft's game division is just now turning a profit. They've been taking losses constantly, and the PlayStation's been taking losses. Nintendo's been making money since day one off this thing. They build a console to be profitable. The Wii U is the first console they've ever sold at a loss, but they make that up the first time you buy a first party game to go with it. It suddenly becomes profitable for them.
Yeah, and I think people don't realize that Xbox, again, that they're not just like Sony's is a tech company that happened to get into video games.
Right.
You know. Well, Microsoft's a software company, so they built up, you know, this Xbox Live, which I don't have a lot of experience with the PlayStation Network, but I hear the Xbox Live is a lot better, and they charge for it though. But just think about all the money they're making from that. Just by charging whatever it is, $10 a month, $5 a month, $50 a year. That's just free money for them.
Right.
You know,
right.
There's probably a little overhead. That little overhead from that money that actually is going towards that. The rest of the profit there.
I would love to see Nintendo take more cues and work on building that online network, which they've done. They've done better with the Wii U than they did with the Wii. Like, the Wii U already has a better network infrastructure built into it than the Wii did. They're making moves towards bringing us all together. But, you know, to me, Nintendo's best multiplayer outings have not been me playing with some 14-year-old halfway around the country. It's been me and my friends sitting on a couch playing GoldenEye or playing, you know, New Super Mario Brothers or whatever. You know, that's the Nintendo multiplayer experience that I love and have.
I think we should just go play GoldenEye right now.
Right.
I mean,
why are we doing a podcast? Why are we not playing GoldenEye?
Because of proximity.
I'll let you guys go. I mean, that sounds good to me. I mean,
yeah.
You can bring up GoldenEye to someone who's not even the games nowadays. They still remember GoldenEye. They still remember how much fun they had with it.
Yeah,
right.
Or didn't.
It's one of those things where, oh my God, GoldenEye, I played in college, or I played in high school, we would play it on a Saturday night. It's just one of those sort of experiences that Nintendo has ingrained in people, this sort of like this fun atmosphere of games. I think that's why a lot of people are fanboys, because when they think of video games, about how fun they were, most of their experiences are back to Nintendo in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
Right.
It all goes back to the NES. It really does.
It really does. And, you know, one thing that I remember so much as a kid is like how that NES connected you with people. Like, when you knew a kid had an NES, like immediately you could probably be friends with that kid. It's not like now where if you meet someone that plays video games, then you have to start asking other questions like, well, do you play Call of Duty a lot? Is that all you play? Because we're probably not going to hang out much.
Yeah.
And I'll even go a step further and say people that only play WoW, World of Warcraft, I tend to not get along with them either.
Well, I mean, you know, and I think it's interesting because I was talking with a guy the other day and we were, you know, beginning a conversation about video games. And I actually mentioned we were going to talk to you, which was kind of weird. And he brought up that he's a PlayStation guy. He started talking about PSN, and I was like, well, you're speaking in a language you don't understand because I enjoy not having my credit card information stolen, and I already have a Blu-ray player, so I'm not going to even go there.
Yeah.
You know, we are Nintendo in this house, and I think that was actually my
statement. For me and my house, we worship the Nintendo.
We will serve Miyamoto-san and Luigi, apparently. Woohoo, year of Luigi.
Year of Luigi. Right on. But anyways, Pat, it's been great talking to you. We want to let everyone know that you got a DVD out, right? A new one?
Yeah. I just put out Volume 1 and 2. People for like 3 years have been asking me to put out a DVD. And good thing I waited, because if I put out a couple years ago, two people would have bought it. But no, I put together this like 6 hours of content with like commentaries, a lot of stuff out there. It's on my website. And people have been saying it's pretty good. So that's my lukewarm push a bit right there. Pretty good.
And everybody can order that DVD from, they get it from thepunkeffect.com.
Yep, they can do that. Also, one thing coming up on Retro TV, the Video Game Years. I don't know if you guys ever watched that show.
I'm actually a very big fan of that show. Really dig
it. We have something next week. By the time people hear this, we're going to launch it. Basically, the show is, I don't want to say it's struggling, but it's coming out at a much slower rate than what we can shoot in terms of editing. It takes a lot of editing time. So we're actually putting together an Indiegogo fundraising campaign to raise money to actually pay editors to actually edit these faster. So that's going to be out next week sometime as well, or this week, whenever you listen to this. Yeah.
Right. We'll be posting. This will be coming out next week.
You'll hear it.
Yeah. And my opinion, I'm going to say something about, in my opinion, Video Game Years is the best retro gaming show on the internet.
I really enjoy Video Game Years, especially when you start breaking into the early 1980s. A lot of those memories. Just great stuff going on there. And are all of you guys based out of the same area, or are y'all spread over the country?
No, we're all over the place. So I'm in San Diego. Rue's in North Carolina. You have John Lance in Connecticut. Derek Alexander's up in Alaska. We are all over the place.
Wow.
Philly and Engineer in Texas. Yeah, just spread out.
So that's why it's so hard for you guys to edit all
so
that.
So they do have the internet in Alaska. I really thought Sarah Palin had done away with that.
You'd think.
In Moose. Mies, whatever the plural of Mises is.
Mises. Well, that's great. We're going to push out everything we can. We are excited to know about your DVD, and we are excited about more episodes of the Video Game Years, and we'll push out that Indiegogo account as well. Also, I have one last very important question for you, probably the most important question of the evening. I think we've all been waiting for it. Pat, you are trapped on a deserted island, not a desert island. It's not made of desserts. It's a deserted island, and it's terrible, like Tomb Raider, but worse. You can take one video game with you, and that's all you have. What do you take?
Civilization 2.
Oh, what a good answer.
It's a good answer.
Oh, my gosh. What a good answer.
You know
answer.
What? I should play 5 because I hear 5 is amazing, so I'll say Civilization 5. I'll update. I have not played a Civilization game since 2.
Just don't take SimCity.
No.
Because, you know.
No, that's it. So, yeah, that would have worked on a desert island.
Oh, man. What a good answer. That's the most original answer we've ever gotten to that question.
Right. We ask, you know, we tend to ask everyone that question if they're related to video games. We're interviewing them. And that's one of the best answers. Because usually it's like Mario or whatever. You'd really get tired of Mario after a while.
I think Chris Roberts said he would take Wing Commander or something that he created when we talked to him. It was like, that's
well,
not fair.
Civilization has unlimited replayability.
Right.
I think it reminds you about the rest of the world.
Oh.
So you sort of keep you in touch with everyone.
See?
In a weird way.
That man's a thinker, and that man is talented. Everyone needs to check out Pat, the NES Punk, and all of his videos.
Where can our listeners find out more about you?
Well, you got thepunkeffect.com and RetroWare TV. I'm part of that site. I help run it. And there you go. I'm also on YouTube. Just search me out, and you'll find some wacky antics, I'm sure.
I watch you on my Wii U, on my TV. How does that make you feel, Pat, the NES Punk? You are on a Nintendo device.
I think you're spending way too much money just to watch my videos. I think that's what it comes down to there.
Just use your phone, Brandon. It's real easy. Come on. All right, man. We thank you for your time.
All right. Thanks, guys.
This has been a Just Us Geeks interview.